death is coming. I'm not here to try and scare you, but so far, death is undefeated. So our goal should be to live as healthy a life as possible for as long as possible. But how do we do that? Well, exercise can play a huge role in that. In this week's podcast, we'll talk all about how both strength and cardiovascular training are critically important for mortality benefits and explain how exercising might be the most important thing you do. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Building Lifelong Athletes podcast. Thanks so much for stopping by. If we haven't met yet, my name is Jordan Reneke. I'm a dual board certified physician in family medicine and sports medicine. And the goal of this podcast is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable, evidence-informed education. So today we're talking all about exercise and mortality. And usually I start these podcasts, specifically the series, like, well, why do we care about this, right? Like, Jordan, why do I care about my blood sugar levels or my whatnot? You know, this is mortality. So I don't have to explain to you, like, dying. Everyone understands dying. Like, dying is not a great thing. Obviously, it's natural and it happens, but nobody wants to do it before their time. And they want to live as healthy of a life as possible. And so I don't really need to give you one. This is a priceless one. And previously, I've talked about different financial reasons, like, oh, you know, exercise or, you know, diabetes has this much impact, dollar impact on the market or whatnot. And it doesn't matter. And I don't need to give you any of those today because this is truly priceless, right? Like, no one's going to sit there on their deathbed and be like, oh, I'd rather just hang on to my money. It's like, no, you'd spend anything you have to give more time with your loved ones or whatnot, do the things you love. So it's priceless. And I don't have to give you any reasons for why this is important. I think this is the single most important episode of the entire season. And I saved it for last because all the other ones are just kind of like, hey, nice little appetizer. But this is like the main course. Like, this is really the most important thing. And yeah, that's why I saved it for last, because it's truly kind of the cherry on top. This is the most important topic we're going to talk about. And mortality, when I say that, just to kind of cover the ground, is mortality is all about death, right? And a lot of people are uncomfortable with that, and that can be weird for them. But the sooner we do it, the sooner we can act in a way that truly matters for us living a healthy life. And exercise will not make you immortal, despite what the biohackers on the internet might make you believe. But it's the most important thing we can do for living a long, healthy life. And so first question we have is, what is the best type of exercise to improve my mortality? And overall, like, the big take home points here, if you just want to stop, don't, there's more nuance here, but strength and cardio both have big importance to that. Your cardiorespiratory fitness and your strength both line up very well with your overall mortality. And they both play a big factor in mortality for their own specific reasons. And if you aren't tired of me talking about combined exercise training, meaning resistance training and aerobic training, then you might be after this episode, because once again, it's really important. But if you aren't tired of it, then you're definitely a true fan, because I've mentioned it literally every single episode. Like, every single episode I've talked about, hey, it's good to do aerobic training and resistance training. And however, there's very clearly a reason for why I'm doing that. Obviously, there's huge benefits for lots of different reasons for doing that. And so overall, that's still the same vibe we're going with today, but we'll dive a little bit deeper on those specific topics. So the first question we're going to ask is, well, what are the benefits of strength training for mortality? And there's lots of them here. They're not as well defined necessarily as our cardiovascular training ones, but strength is a big marker, indicator of risk in older adults. I mean, kind of helps point to them saying, hey, if you're stronger, you have a higher risk of, you know, being independent and having a decreased risk of having metabolic syndromes when you're adult. So it's very important. So overall, the stronger you are, it means like you're going to be sick less often and less likely are to get metabolic syndrome. And when we look at the data here, a lot of times how we measure this is a hand grip. So people, essentially, if you think about just squeezing as hard as you can, the devices there and recording how strong it is, that is kind of the marker for strength. And it's also used as a marker for fragility as well and kind of frailty. And there does seem to be, you know, a decent correlation with like grip strength overall and overall strength. It's not perfect by any means, but that's what we see a lot in the data. So it's what we use. And overall with strength, there seems to be an inverse relationship between muscular strength and all-cause mortality in patients with disease and without disease. So meaning, hey, if you're strong and you have some sort of illness, it's better for you. And likewise, if you have no illness and you're strong, it's good for you. So long story short, being strong is very good for you. And on top of hand grip, there's also lower extremity strength that can be used as a predictor to perform activities of daily living and frailty. Meaning, hey, if you have stronger leg strength, usually measured through like a leg extension machine, that those people tend to have, you know, they're able to increase chance of performing their daily activities and decrease risk of frailty or like falls or whatnot. So we have both upper and lower strength tests, which do seem to help determine people's risk overall. And one meta-analysis that I looked at showed that those who had a higher grip strength had a 31% reduced all-cause mortality. And that is a lot. And they also saw this association between both men and women. So it's not just like, oh, like men, if you're stronger. No, it's equal with both men and women. And they also looked at a lower body measure. So those who had a higher knee extension strength had a 14% lower risk of death. So, you know, hand grip was 31, lower was 14, you know, meet somewhere in the middle, maybe looking at 20%. That's pretty important. in terms of what are the mechanisms behind this, like I mentioned, we're not really as sure with strength. It's kind of interesting, but people who are stronger tend to have like lower chronic inflammation, which may play a factor. On top of that, if you have poor muscle strength, that may lead to increase in lipoprotein lipase, which we've talked about in the cardiovascular and the lipid series. That may lead to increase triglycerides and decrease HDL, which also may have an issue. And obviously, when you have lower strength as well, you got an increased risk of frailty and falls and fractures related to falls. So there's multiple different mechanisms for why strength might be very important. But overall, we're not entirely sure, but we see pretty robustly that when you're strong, it's really good. So being strong is never going to hurt you. And then moving on to our next topic, we're talking about the benefits of cardiovascular training with mortality. So what are the benefits of cardiovascular training for mortality? And there's a lot of epidemiologic data, and there shows an inverse relationship between all-cause mortality and cardiorespiratory fitness, meaning that, hey, the more fit you are, the less likely you are to die. And the biggest improvement in mortality is going from like the lowest level of fitness to moderate. And then you do continue to improve, but it's not as drastic. And so that's like the biggest thing is, hey, if you're doing nothing, like going from like nothing to like decently like exercising, like moderate activity, that's a huge improvement in mortality. And then from there, it does get better. It is a dose dependent. I mean, the more you exercise, the better you are, but your bang for the buck is not as big. And so that's okay. I'm not saying, oh, I just want the bang for the buck. No, like optimize it, go exercise. Exercise is great. But it's just my point of saying, hey, as a physician, I see people all the time who are down here, right? Who are doing absolutely nothing. And if I can get them to do like anything, I'll feel good that I'm doing good. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not doing nothing, is my guess. You're probably like exercising and you like doing that. And that's great. That's fantastic. But just understanding that knowledge that you can always do more. It can always be better, but do not freak out, right? You get to a point where you're fit and you're doing well and the juice might not be worth the squeeze in terms of just your time commitment or injury risk or anything like that. But overall, if you're evaluating yourself, listen to this and saying like, man, I don't work out at all. Well, then good news is you got a huge improvements right in front of you just to start doing something. So that's just something to think about. And when we think about like how much we have to exercise to get the benefits, it's kind of challenging, right? Because running mortality studies is like a long time. So you got to wait for people to die, unfortunately, and see like how long it does. But it seems like overall the optimal risk reduction area is approximately if you can do 10 metabolic equivalents when age like 65 plus. So overall, what are 10 METs? METs are like such a weird thing. I don't love METs because nobody like just thinks in METs like, oh, I'm doing whatever MET activity, unless you're going upstairs. People talk about that for cardiac clearance. But either way, so 10 METs at 65 plus, that includes like bicycling approximately 15 miles an hour, jumping rope, if you can jump rope, that's 10 METs, or running 6 miles an hour. And these results seem to be pretty consistent across age, race, and sex. And the mortality risk for those who are least fit or hit a peak of 4.7 METs was 4 times higher than those who are extremely fit who hit a peak METs of 14.5. And there are multiple studies kind of showing this inverse relationship, meaning the lower your cardiovascular fitness, the higher the chance for mortality issues. And so overall here, I think that's awesome. If you're 65-year-old and you can bicycle at 15 miles an hour, jump rope, or run 6 miles an hour, which is not a crazy fast pace, but it's still a decent pace, then you have like probably the optimal risk, meaning, hey, like you're in a good shape. And once again, it's going to be more. And when we talked about kind of these risk factors being, when your METs are low, your risk is high, the risk was higher. When we looked at these risks, like these risks of being inactive or having worse cardiorespiratory fitness, the risks of those were higher than any traditional cardiac risk factor, things like high blood pressure, smoking, or like known cardiovascular disease. So literally like if you had known cardiovascular disease, like that's less a risk factor than if you were physically inactive or had poor cardiorespiratory fitness. So that's like, if anything right there, if like the take home from today is like having good cardiorespiratory fitness is like the most protective thing you can probably do for yourself, like just looking at the data there. And strength is hard to quantify as much just because we've had a lot of increase in strength over the past couple of years and maybe decade. And so the data is probably catching up there, but it's harder to quantify that. Like, oh, what is strong? Like, oh, I can squat this or I can bench this. That's hard. They do the hand grip, which is a proxy, but cardiorespiratory fitness is probably a lot easier to do because it's like, oh, can you do these activities? And like, oh yeah, I know that. And so that's kind of the overall theme there. And then a question went hand in hand though. Is like, okay, you kind of talked about METs, Jordan, and things here, there. How much physical activity do I actually need to do to get mortality benefits? And from an aerobic perspective, there's a pretty cool cohort study that was done in the United States in 2020. There were about 116,000 adults from 2 prospective cohorts who were analyzed and reported leisure time physical activity. And so this is important, saying leisure time physical activity. This is not like job-related activity. So I'm just taking it back, not job-related activity. And then they looked at the association between long-term leisure time activity, your physical activity, intensity, and mortality. And those who met the vigorous activity guidelines of 75 to 149 minutes per week or the moderate guidelines of 150 to 300 minutes per week saw about a 20 to 25% lower risk in all-cause cardiovascular and non-cardiovascular disease mortality. So decrease their risk of dying by approximately 25%. And if you went above the guidelines, like by 2 to 4 times the recommendations, it showed about a 2 to 4% improvement in mortality for the vigorous group, and then 3 to 13% for the lower mortality for the moderate group. So taking a step back there, overall, what does that mean? It means that overall, we pretty much maxed out mortality benefits in those that performed about 150 to 300 minutes of vigorous activities, or 300 to 600 moderate. You might be like, well, those numbers aren't what you just said. They did say like, hey, they did see increases going as you're going, But once we even hit the basic ones, 75 vigorous or 150 moderate, we still saw that quarter reduction. And then from there, we started seeing incremental improvements, you know, like 2 to 4, you know, if you went twice of the recommendation. So, you know, let's say 150 is normal, right? For moderate. If you went 300, that increased things by like anywhere from 2 to 10%, you know, not necessarily that huge, but it could be depending on who you are. So yes, if you go increase it by another 10%, that's big. I think that's substantial. But if you do by 2% for doubling your time, you know, is it worth it? Probably, because it's mortality, but overall, just trying to give you a general picture here. And overall, like peaking out at 150 to 300 of vigorous or 300 of moderate, yeah, that seems like a lot of time. But looking at the actual data, once you hit like the baseline recommendations, like the physical activity guidelines, there isn't an enormous benefit, right? Like we're not going from, hey, you get 20 at the entry level and then you're up to 50 all of a sudden by doing, you know, just a little bit more. It's like, no, you go from zero to meeting them, huge benefits. And then from there, it's kind of incremental. And we know that, right? It's incremental. You're getting, you know, how much is the juice worth the squeeze? That's really what it comes down to. And for some people, they want to do as much as possible. They love working out. Like you're clearly, it shows the more you do, the better you'll be. I'm not saying that. I am not saying that at all. But I'm saying if you're trying to get like the highest yield thing, it's like, okay, hitting maybe the upper limit of the recommendations, and you're probably going to get most of the benefit. You know, if you're okay with that, then that's fine. If you want to optimize and go more, hey, knock yourself out. That's great. But I just don't want to sit there. You know, you hear some of these people online say like, yeah, I work out for like, you know, 15 hours a week, or, you know, 20 hours a week, or do whatever. And that's cool. And that's awesome. And I wish I could do that too. But just sometimes life gets in the way, you know, whether being a parent or your job or whatnot, just so understanding, you got to have this permission to be like, okay, like, I'm doing the best I can do. And I'm getting a lot of benefit from it. You know, I think it's very easy to listen to things on the internet and be like, dang, I need to do like substantially more. But then you realize, well, but I also got to sleep and be a husband and a father and go to my job and, you know, be well otherwise. So there's give and take, right? And so I thought it was cool to say like, hey, if you're hitting the physical activity guidelines, you're getting a really good improvement. And then anything you can squeeze out above that is great. And like my whole thing is just, hey, get up to those physical activity guidelines. That's the main goal I talk about all the time. And then from there, absolutely, let's crush it. Let's get more, let's do more. But it's just, is it worth the squeeze for your life? You'll have to kind of determine. You know, you will continue to creep up and get benefits until that top level, but it's not enormous. And so that's just something I want to mention and say, this is the data that what it seems to show. Take that for what it's worth. And then I real quick just wanted to touch on VO2 max. That is a hot topic in the social media world today, and for good reason. It's very important. So VO2 max is essentially the max amount of oxygen you can uptake when at max exercise. So essentially you can do different tests, whether it's on, you know, a treadmill, you have to have some sort of device hooked up to your mouth to kind of measure the oxygen output there and carbon dioxide. And then you calculate essentially how much you're uptaking oxygen. And then you can use that, like I said, running, or you can do that on a bike, whatnot. And that's a very good proxy of how fit you are, right? Obviously, the higher your VO2 max, the more fit you are. And also, you can kind of go hand in hand, VO2 max with metabolic equivalence. They kind of go back and forth. There's a strong correlation. And overall, though, with the data, unsurprisingly, the better both either your ability to do METs or VO2 max are, the less mortality. And I'm not going to specifically talk about numbers, because the numbers are going to change, right? Depending on your age and sex. And so I'm not going to go through them definitively, but the higher they are, the better. And then talking about how much resistance training do we need to do to get mortality benefits? And it's a lot harder here to say. A lot of the data uses grip strength, and it's kind of a proxy for overall strength. And it's not a bad one. Obviously, we can measure that, and it's easy. You just like, hey, squeeze, and you measure that. And it's not bad because you can't cheat on it, right? You earn that after being strong for years and years. Like you don't just like train for a week or a couple weeks and be like, okay, I can just crush the grip strength. No, like you need to develop strength over time. Same thing with VO2 max. You can't just cheat that and be like, oh, like I have a really high VO2 max after 2 weeks of exercising. That's not how it works. Just put the time in. And so it's useful from that perspective, but it's also hard to tell exact numbers, right? So what does that mean? You know, a lot of times the data also just splits them up into quartiles or tertiles, meaning, hey, this lower third, middle third, upper third, and then what does the strength look like compared to mortality? So it's really hard to like say, hey, your grip strength leads to this much on the bench. Like that's really hard to do, and you can't do that. And so there's not a good one definitively saying like, oh, like this is how strong you need to be. So I think overall, if you're like a general decent level of strength, when you can move some weight around relative to your age and your sex, I think you're probably going to get most of the benefit that we've seen from exercise training and mortality from resistance perspective. But it's really hard to say, and it's really hard to quantify. So maybe you've heard this now and you say, okay, well, I'm interested. How do I increase my strength or cardiorespiratory fitness? And that's a great question. And the biggest thing is it's going to take work, right? It's going to take consistent work and effort. And there's no biohacking this. People will say, you know, do this hack, this 3-minute workout. And it's like, man, all I know is, like, take a step back. Does that pass like the litmus test? Does it pass the SNF test? Meaning, hey, the people who need the highest fitness in the world, like people who are marathon runners or, you know, cross-country skiers or swimmers or whatever, like, are they doing these hacks, right? Of just, I just work out 3 minutes a day, just doing this intensity, you know, high intensity workout. Like, no, it takes years and years of work to get there. And so it's the same thing. You know, am I saying you have to work out as much as a professional athlete? Obviously not. Like, come on, you know, I'm not saying that. But there are people online who say, hey, all you need to do is this 5-minute workout, and that's just as good as doing X, Y, and Z. And I think you got to step back and just, you know, look at those claims and be like, okay, what are they really getting at? Maybe they're saying, hey, higher intensity activity requires less of it. And there's no argument there. Look at the physical activity guidelines, you know, 75 minutes of vigorous versus 150 moderate. So very clearly, if you're doing more vigorous, you can do less. But if you want to get super fit or super strong, it takes a lot. And the key to doing this is progressive loading, right? You kind of progress your way, whether it's cardiorespiratory fitness or strength, like, you got to do it. You got to slowly build up over time and build, give yourself some tolerance, and don't do it right away. Don't jump into like a million things, right? You know, if you're saying, well, I'm listening to this and I'm excited, I want to go 300 minutes a week and I've done zero so far. Let's just like slowly guide into it, right? Slowly work them up to get up to the guidelines. This helps, you know, prevent injury risk and derailing your overall progress. And once you're starting to get going, then we can kind of build from there. And it's very important to do this, right? From a resistance training standpoint, you're just literally not going to be able to. That's the thing. Like, oh, I want to squat 225. Like, you can't do it. There's no rushing that. You get there when you're ready. And so you slowly get there. And once you're familiar with the movements, you can start to increase the load and reps over time in a thoughtful way. That's the way to do it. And there's a million different ways to increase your strength through different programs. It's probably a whole podcast series in itself, which I go into hopefully about programming. But for resistance training, just slow progression. Then from a cardiovascular standpoint, same idea as resistance training, but then it's going to look a little different, right? Because you can theoretically just get up and go run like 10 miles, right? You could probably do that. It might be really tough. You walk in and run a little bit, but we want to progress that just like we would lifting, right? So lifting, we're constrained by like the number and saying that we can't do that, or we're too super tired, I can't lift it. Whereas running, you can keep going. And so we just want to be conscious. We want to slowly go that. And there are lots of ways to improve cardiovascular fitness. Like I mentioned, sometimes it's intense exercise, like high intensity training, VO2 max training. Other times it's kind of lower, slower, longer distance cardio. There's lots of ways to do that. And that's a whole nother podcast series as well, but you can do it. But if you continue to improve, increase what you're doing, you're going to get better and you're probably getting the benefits. And so unless you're an elite athlete, it doesn't really matter in terms of like, oh, I need to hit X, Y, and Z number. And even then, the numbers don't matter for athletes, just their performance does. But the goal, if you're not doing that, if you're saying, hey, I want to be healthy, Jordan, like I want to have, you know, the healthiest life I can and decrease my risk of dying prematurely, like what do I do? Once again, start those physical activity guidelines. If we're not there, get there. And I hound on this because it just shows time after time, the data, like most people aren't there. Like even the people who lift, like I've been guilty of this for many years in the past where like I like lifting. Lifting's my thing. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. My body's like better made for it. I feel like that's just like where I thrive. But that doesn't necessarily count as aerobic training. So yes, is it exercising? 100%. Can it be vigorous? Sometimes I can get your heart rate up there, or you moderate if you're doing certain things. But overall, like we'll have people who are strong and they lift 6 days a week, but can barely walk up a flight of stairs because they don't do any cardio. And so yeah, they're exercising 6 times a week, but not in a way that's, you know, optimal for their health. And so I just want to throw that out there, the kind of caveats. And overall, the take home points here are that very clearly exercise is good for you. It's very good. Based on the data, you know, more may be better. And the higher you go, the more improvement you get, but up to a certain point, it's kind of like diminishing returns. But at least hitting the physical activity guidelines is a good start. And then based on the data as well, this may be the most important thing you can do to kind of decrease your mortality. Like more important than any other risk factor, including, you know, hypertension or, you know, hyperlipidemia, any of those things, exercise and cardiovascular fitness might be the most important thing. And I've said this previously, but if this were a medication, it would be the most widely prescribed medication of all time because there's so many benefits. But because it takes work, very few people actually do it. And if we are going to do it, combine both resistance and aerobic training to get the most benefits. And overall, if you're hitting the physical activity recommendations, you know, we're at the right place there. Kind of go up from there and you'll benefit from going above it, but it's kind of up to you. And there is no free lunch, right? You got to put in the work to get a high level of fitness or strength. And so there's no biohack around this. You got to put in work. But that's a good thing, right? Because working hard and achieving goals is good for us and it's a good thing to do. But overall, that is going to end our podcast today and end this whole season. We'll kind of take a break here, do some one-off episodes. But thanks so much for watching. If you made it through, I really appreciate it. If you're not on my mailing list, please sign up. I'll notify you whenever I put out some new content, and I won't spam you because I don't like spam. And this does conclude the episode. Now get off your phone, get outside, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next time. Disclaimer, this podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.